Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, I got a phone call from my landlord, and she says, hey, we're going to come by and turn on the heat, thank God. And she goes, by the way, can you keep the gate locked in front of your house? And I was like,
the gay locked?
No, the gate. Sorry, let me bite into that consonant. And I was like, well, I keep it unlocked for deliveries. And she goes, well, we just don't want people coming in off the street and showering in the front yard. And I said, is that a thing?
Has that happened?
She was like, oh, well, you have a hose in the front yard, and sometimes when people need a shower, they will seize the opportunity. And I'm like, literally thinking what you just said. Has that happened before? Am I going to come out onto my front lawn and see some stranger showering in my front yard just...
Never felt as clean as now. Zestfully clean. Well, you know what I say.
Move back to New York.
Hello, Delvage Society. It is a rainy, rainy day here on the East Coast. How is it where you are, my love?
It's sunny and beautiful. And it's so funny. You're like, come back to New York. I'm like, okay, so my choices are someone showering in my front yard or someone pissing on my building every day.
Honestly, that's a toss-up for me. Welcome, Down Bitch Society, to your Patreon episode this week. We're here...
And that's it. And actually, whatever tier you're on, thank you for joining our Patreon and supporting us. We're just grateful you're here and that you allow us to flap our dick suckers just a little bit more.
It's fun and it's great and it's our job and we love it. There's a couple people who are in the Facebook group being like, I don't want to be that person, but what does "and that's cats" mean?
Should we tell the story real quick?
Yeah, I posted it on our Instagram, but yeah, go for it.
Real fast. Okay, so this is like an urban legend from Broadway and everyone deserves to know the story because it's absurd. Apparently, there were two women who were standing in line at the TKTS, which is where you can buy discounted Broadway tickets in Times Square. And they're like, oh, Cats is playing. What is Cats? Well, a TKTS worker overhears and goes, let me tell you what Cats is. And Brandon Uranowitz, Broadway's own Brandon Uranowitz, tells this story and it's hysterical. Play the clip.
So there are these cats. They're in the trash. There's an older cat. She's very sick. She's dying. The other cats, they sing, they dance to try to make her feel better. They're very good. P.S. It doesn't work. So they put her in a tire and they blast her through the roof.
That's Cats.
And that is Cats. Said it for forever. That video has been passed around through the generations.
Mm-hmm.
It has been passed around. It is lore. It is legend. Anyway, I thought it was funny. They were like, I don't want to be embarrassing, but where did the "and that's Cats" come from?
And now you're a part of the legend. Welcome. We have coffee and bars.
Welcome to the shit show. Once you're in, there's actually like no exiting. It's like Disney World.
Yeah.
Once you're gone, you're gone. You can try and get that little glow in the dark. No, you're stuck here. You're stuck with us. That's it.
It's the Matrix.
You can get the glow in the dark thing on your hand and the guy's going to be like, no, that looks washed off.
Get to the episode.
We're here on our journey of I escaped prison break. There's a colon in there somewhere.
It's called Escaped Real Prison Breaks. You just made that title up. You guys, I tried to find this show called I Escaped Prison Breakouts. I can't find it. What's it called again?
Prison Outbreak. That's a whole separate thing about gonorrhea. Season 2, Episode 8.
A Fugitive Among Us.
A Fugitive Among Us.
In this episode of I Escaped, two natural-born killers use the Bible to stage a miraculous escape.
The system is supposed to protect and safeguard the community. It failed.
And a convicted murderer tries serving her life sentence outside of jail.
I just dropped to all fours on the other side and then got up and went.
Well, y'all, grab your slap bracelets and feed your Tamagotchi because we are going back to the 90s. It is March of 1995, and we are at the Bernalillo County Detention Center in downtown Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we are told...
This multi-level security monster has a solid reputation for keeping convicts behind bars.
Not for long, it don't.
Well, I do also know that I can often miss the point, and I'm not that smart, but isn't it actually their responsibility to keep convicts behind bars? Like, I just feel like that's in the job description of prison.
You have one job. You have one main job.
Yeah.
To keep murderers from roaming around the streets of Sheboygan.
How do we describe what prison is? I don't know. Say it's like their responsibility to keep the convicts behind bars or something like that. Great. Copy.
Yeah, what's the code for prison break?
We have a whoopsie daisy. Code whoopsie daisy.
Like, what the fuck? You have one job. So one of our subjects today is 19-year-old Sebastian Eccleston, which is so young. 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And Sebastian is awaiting his trial for murder. And apparently he drove by a high school footballer and shot him. So young, old, it doesn't matter. This guy is dangerous.
Yeah, but also with him is 20-year-old Daniel Mitchum. He is behind bars for second-degree murder for a crime he committed in 1993. Now, this wasn't intentional, which is the second-degree murder charge, because it actually happened during a carjacking.
Yep.
So Daniel is actually sentenced to 36 years behind bars. And one of the talking heads is a man from the New Mexico State Police, and his name is Sergeant Tom Christensen, and he says...
Mitchum was a convicted murderer, and it doesn't get any worse than that.
I'm already confused. We're 1 minute and 50 seconds in. Like, murder is super bad. I mean, I feel like if we really put our heads together, we could come up with something worse than murder, but I don't need to do that. But yes, Tom, it doesn't get any worse than murder.
You drove the point home. So these two guys become friends because that's what you want. Two stone cold murderers buddying up in prison. And they both decide, no, prison sucks.
Yeah, well, the narrator says this.
Meeting on the inside, the two killers bond over their mutual desire to escape.
Spoiler alert, this episode is just gonna piss me off. I feel like everyone behind bars, now I don't want to make broad sweeping statements, but I feel like they all probably want out. Now, that being said, I feel like there might be a small percentage of people that are like, actually, I'm pretty cool with these amenities.
Or maybe they're like, I deserve to be here.
Yeah, like the food isn't that bad. I've had worse roommates, but that's not something you bond over. Like, they didn't both like collect prosthetic legs or something like that. They were like,
what?
It's not something that, you know, one of the guys is like, hey, I have this really weird collection, like, you won't get it. And the other guy's like, I don't know, try me. And he's like, okay, I mean, there is a backstory, but I'm just going to get to the point. I collect prosthetic legs. And the other guy's like, bro, you are never going to believe this. Like, you both are in prison and you want to fucking get out. That's not a thing to bond over.
It's not an anomaly. So their first step in their journey to escape, it's to join the God Pod program. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is not a new podcast. No, no, no. It is the God Pod program. And if you're asking yourself, what the fuck is a God Pod program? I'll let the show explain.
The God Pod, or Bible study area, was a separate area to which members admitted to the religious study program were assigned.
So while these people were studying the Bible, these two numbskulls were studying ways to escape this prison. And they sort of wrote their own hymn about this experience.
Oh.
Do you want to hear it?
I'd love to. Basically hiding behind religion, and I've seen people do much more hiding behind religion, you know what I'm saying?
It's true. Well, it turns out that the security guards in this area of the prison, they were chilling. They were not quite on top of things, and that is not what you want happening in any jail that houses murderers.
Being in this God Pod gave them a little bit more leeway, and I wrote that in my notes. I wrote, being part of the pod gave leeway, question mark. Like, I don't understand why. They're just like, it gave them more time to explore. I feel like that directly contradicts what they said at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, it's quite strange. You're just banking on all these people trying to find Jesus. These two idiots are trying to find a way out.
Exactly. It just seems very strange. So then the narrator says,
after a month studying the Bible.
The Bible. Do you hear that judgment in the narrator's voice?
Like it's allegedly the Bible.
So on this little exploration that they're apparently allowed to go on, they find an unlocked utility closet.
And in that utility closet, there's a vent door that led to the ductwork throughout the prison. So here's the plan.
First, they'll head to the third floor utility closet and gain access to the air duct inside. The two will then risk rappelling down the narrow 65-foot shaft. If they survive the drop, they'll land in a maintenance room where Eccleston and Mitchum hope to find tools to break through a wall leading out.
What? What did I miss?
Shaft.
We are 10 years old.
You know what? The world is on fire. I'm allowed.
Yeah.
You laughed at duties last week. I'm laughing at Shaft.
That's fine. Potato, patata. Here's the thing. I'm like, y'all are banking on some real non-guaranteed variables here.
Well, they're just kind of like, they want out and they don't have a plan beyond that. Like, you know, we've heard other plans where they're like, they know this goes to that and then the rigor mortis sets in and
what?
We want to go in that closet, which is funny because I think that is going to be the song that a lot of gay people are singing next year, but continue on.
So
go back in the closet where it's safe.
Instead of back in the saddle again, they're like, back in the closet again. So their main priority is they have to find a rope so they can rappel down that 60-foot, what is it, Ellen? Go ahead, say it.
Shaft.
Stupid. Now, that's not going to be easy to find in prison. So what do? They collect bed sheets. Lots and lots of bed sheets, which they tie together to form an over 70-foot long makeshift rope.
So now it's March 27th, 1995. And by this time, the two besties, I mean, they have so much in common.
Yeah.
They're soulmates.
They're members of the Ya-Ya sisterhood.
So Mitchum leaves for Bible study. He was really excited they were going to tell the parable of the last sheep.
Mm-hmm.
So while he was going to fake Bible study, Eccleston stays behind. And they take a page right out of Escape from Alcatraz.
Yep.
And they make these fake dummies to fool the guards. This has, like, been done since the year one.
Listen, I don't know if Sebastian Eccleston, like, worked set design on a haunted house, but this was, like, attention to detail. He stuffed two socks and stuck them out of the covers so it looked like there were two people in there. And meanwhile, back at the prayer meeting, Daniel is like, y'all, can we pray for our brother Sebastian? He is on the sick and shut-in list.
Yeah.
He is not feeling well. And what's insane is that a guard hearing that information should have been like, oh, let me go back to the cell to make sure that he is in fact sick and in his bed. But no one did that.
That wasn't what we call an oversight.
I would agree.
That was an oversight. So Mitch is back at his fake prayer meeting, finishing up the fourth and often overlooked chorus of Eagle's Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchum meets the waiting Eccleston at the utility closet. For the killers, there's no turning back. They can only pray to be long gone before someone notices them missing.
And meanwhile, any guard who checked their cell saw what appeared to be two murderers getting some shut-eye.
Mm-hmm.
They get in through that vent up in the utility closet, and then they get to the shaft. Go for it. Go ahead. And it's time to tackle that pesky 60-foot drop. So somehow they shimmy down that rope without incident. Let me tell you something. A 65-foot drop, that is terrifying.
It's three stories. They were on the third floor. It is very strange because they didn't do that check. But also, because of things like this and because of people dying by suicide, there's a very strict one-in, one-out policy.
Mm.
Turn in your sheets, you get a new sheet. Turn in your wreck outfit, you get a new one. It's
right.
Pretty strict. I mean, we're going to learn this prison was like a chill prison.
I mean, well, it's also 1995, and I'm sure that whatever that mandate was put in after these two numbskulls.
It's prison, but, like, everybody be cool.
Yeah.
Just, like, it's just have a cool prison.
Everyone takes an oath of cool when they come here.
Yeah.
They devote their lives to just being cool.
Just be cool, be chill. Don't be all uncool.
Well, these two have no chill because somehow they manage to shimmy down that 70-foot rope and they get to the drop. Now they're in the maintenance area and what do they find? A tool locker. Tell them what these two idiots yeeted out of that locker.
Okay, there are so many missteps on this prison. I was like, oh, they found tools. What did they find? A wrench? No, no, not a wrench. They find a blowtorch,
yep,
a hacksaw,
uh-huh,
and a screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
They had tools.
Honey.
They had like a whole, you can get it at Walmart. It's a break out of prison kit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it was like a whole like, hey, I heard you wanted to break out of prison. Do you want these tools?
Honey, it was Christmas morning in that prison for them. They had everything they need and they'd literally break through the wall.
That's not what they said.
They blast through the wall.
They blast through the wall?
What they don't tell you on the show is they push through the wall like the Kool-Aid man and they were like, oh yeah.
Yeah. And then they say,
they make it out onto the ground floor roof.
I'm I'm sorry. I know I'm doing a lot of nitpicking today. I just feel like they're fucking with us. How do you have a roof on the ground fucking floor? What does that even mean?
I think what they meant to say was the first floor roof.
I think they're fucking with us. I think there was an understudy on this day because there's a lot of shit going wrong. They're on the ground floor roof. That's not a thing. There's no roof on the ground floor.
No, they're on the roof of the first floor, which is still a 20-foot drop, and that is very high.
Yeah.
Still. But they're like, we just did 65 feet. 20 feet is nothing. Child's play. So they jump, hit the ground, and they're out of there. They go their separate ways. How do these people fall from a 20-foot height and not break a nail? Nothing.
I think the strength training that they do in prison, maybe. I don't know. I sprained my ankle walking up a flight of stairs.
I've seen it. You're fucking olive oil.
Oh, Popeye. That was so good. So remember, we're in the chillax. We're in the chill. We're in the cool prison. They don't do checks overnight. No, everyone's just sleeping. We're sleepy. We have a gummy. Microdose is back. Oh my gosh. I've never been happier.
In this prison, they're so chill. They're just playing some music. I think we actually have a clip of what they play.
Mm-hmm.
Here in this prison, we are chill. You are chill. We are chilling. And remember, just be cool. Don't be all uncool. Pleasant dreams.
So they don't do a count till the next morning because obviously they're going to have like mimosas and like bottomless Bellinis. Like, you know, when that's all done, we're like, whatever.
12 hours later. The guards finally realize, I think someone broke the oath of chill.
Honestly, I can't tell if these are dummies or these are our guys. They couldn't have broken out. They took the oath.
Authorities suspect Mitchum's former girlfriend and mother to their 2-year-old daughter.
It's actually, randomly, in the show, it's a daughter. In real life, it's a boy.
Really?
Isn't that weird? Maybe they could only get, like, a little kid girl actor and they couldn't get a boy or something, but it's actually a boy. I always think it's weird when they change random things like that.
That is weird. Well, the ex-girlfriend's name is Ernestina Rodriguez, and the police are like, I bet she's helping him. Let's go chat with her. She's like, I have no idea where the fuck that dude is. I did not help him. Good luck with your project.
Yeah, and they keep checking back, okay? They keep going back to Ernestina's apartment, search a little. They're trying to have a little gotcha moment. They didn't believe her. They thought she was like a really bad liar. But actually, they come up with nothing every time they do a search. So now it's March 30th, and they still haven't found either guy. Now, babe, I know you hate kids.
I don't hate kids. I just don't want to be around them.
Okay. But the one thing that you have to appreciate with children is children will tell you straight to your face.
Oh, a kid will read you to fucking filth and have no idea that they just read you to filth.
Yeah. I mean, the things that children say. Did I ever tell you the story when Lola was playing with my eyes? I was like laying on the couch and she was rubbing my eyes and she goes, Mommy, your eyes look just like mine, but your eyelids are a little more floppy.
You're going to live with Chinona in San Francisco. My Lord. Yeah, kids are monsters. They don't care. Well, let me tell you, Daniel's 2-year-old, apparently son, he has no chill either because on the third day that the police go over there to check out Ernestina's apartment again, Daniel's daughter slash son is like, my daddy's in the fridge. Excuse me? What did you say? My daddy's in the fridge. What? And they look to Ernestina and she just nods like, mm-mm.
They don't say that she was charged with anything with harboring a fugitive. I feel like there might have been some abuse there, but I am speculating because she definitely was like, mm-hmm, he's in the fridge. Let me get out of your way.
Yeah. I feel like he was holding her there. Yeah. I feel like he barged his way into that apartment and she was like, he's in the fucking fridge. Go get him.
Mm-hmm.
They pull this man out of the fucking refrigerator and arrest him like he's a carton of milk. And Daniel went along cooperatively, and one of the detectives gives us a piece of parting advice in case any of you ever decide to go into law enforcement.
Always, always check the refrigerator.
Will do, copper. Will do.
If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times, right? Wear your seatbelt. Don't walk alone at night. Don't use your phone. Don't text on your phone while you're walking by yourself. And always
check the refrigerator. I'll add it to my list. When I come home at night and I want to make sure there's no murderer lurking in my house and I check all the closets,
yeah,
I'll check the fridge too.
New fear unlocked. I'm going to go into our hotel rooms now and not swipe back the shower curtain. I'll be like, someone check the fridge!
So after 3 days on the lam, Daniel is back in prison. But what about Sebastian? Remember, this man is a cold-blooded killer. Well, for 4 months, this man is touring North America, and then he takes his tour to South America. He's all over the place. Then somehow, this convicted felon gets back into the United States, and he lands in upstate New York. And the fact that this man left the country and returned, they're like, how and why?
Everyone was wondering how he got back from South America, and then one of the talking heads says this.
There's the expression, when you're gone, you stay gone.
I know a lot of expressions.
I guess that's in regard to, like, if you're a wanted felon.
There's don't cry over spilled milk, you're barking up the wrong tree, actions speak louder than words, we'll burn that bridge when we get to it. But when you're gone, you stay gone. That's not an expression.
Apparently it is on this show.
You know how that old expression is, when you need to go to the gas station and you accidentally wore your house scuffies, you better hope they take Apple Pay. What? You can't just say words and call it an idiom.
It's like what they say about running out of poppers. Ooh, ow, that stinks.
That one I hear all the time. The other one, no, choke. That's not a real thing.
Sebastian is in Sherborne, New York, and he meets up with an old friend named Amy Custer. And Amy has no idea that this man has committed murder and is a wanted felon. She just lets him stay with her because to her, it's her good friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what Sebastian is not counting on is being on TV, because his escape was featured on a nationally televised show, which I'm going to assume is America's Most Wanted.
Probably. Or, yeah, I was going to say Cops, but no, Cops is when they catch them. Yeah, probably America's Most Wanted. Yeah, a lot of these guys ended up on that show.
It certainly wasn't Good Morning America.
So Amy was like, hey, how's it going? Funny story. I was watching television today, and I don't know how to say this. Are you on the lam?
Whatever nice guy Sebastian was presenting, that went away real fast.
Mm-hmm.
It went gone and it stayed gone because he was like, yes, I am. And if you turn me in, I will kill you.
Yikes.
And she's like, okay, that's fine. And it's Amy's mama who calls the cops. Amy's all, I promised I wouldn't turn you in. I didn't say my mama wouldn't.
Exactly. Amy's mom is a down bitch.
So now the cops have a location. And in July of 1995, they're in Sherborne, New York. They are ready to arrest him.
Our team made the entry. He had hidden in a bathroom and had actually stepped in behind the door.
I don't know how they found this guy. If you're hiding behind the bathroom door, it's pretty much a done deal.
Yeah, it's like wearing the cloak of invisibility in Harry Potter.
There was a little bit of a scuffle, a gun dropped, a bullet was discharged, nobody was hurt, there was a struggle, he was apprehended, you had a good run, buddy. Good job. Listen, we're not mad, we're just disappointed.
Yeah.
Head on back to the chill prison, you know what you did, do you promise not to do it again?
Yeah.
You'll get all your chill privileges back, okay? All right, walk it off and go get some lemonade.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we can no longer play our Kumbaya music for you. For the next 75 years, it's just Chumbawamba on repeat.
Oh, God, why did anyone like that song? It's so weird.
So after 4 months, he's in custody and he goes to court where he is charged and pleads guilty to not only murder, but hijacking a car.
Mm-hmm.
And he is hit with 30 years in a California prison. Now, his escapee partner, Daniel Mitchum, who is now known as Danny the Fridge, finishes out his sentence in New Mexico, but they don't tell us how long. Now, did you do your research on Sebastian?
Oh, yes, I did. I read his entire appeal. It was fascinating. I think it was like 20 pages long.
Yeah.
Because it did a whole history of his life. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, his appeal was epic. Do you want to say what you found?
Well, he was supposed to serve his 30 years. He was actually given 2 30-year sentences, but was told that he could serve them concurrently. But then they switched it up on him years later, saying, JK, you have to serve them consecutively, which means 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he appealed that decision, and the prosecution didn't want a retrial because it meant bringing the victim's family back into court, bringing all of those witnesses back in. It was just going to be a thing and a thing and a thing. So they let Sebastian plead down to a second-degree murder charge, which came with a 16-year sentence. So instead of serving 60 years, he'll serve 45, 46.
The first thing I read was that he appealed on a compassionate release request. So as soon as I read that, I was like, oh my gosh, he must have gotten cancer or something like that. So that compassionate release request was denied April 21st, 2020. And again, April 7th, 2021, he basically gave this whole song and dance about how he had asthma and the COVID-19 virus. He was terrified of getting it again because that first wave in prisons, everyone got COVID-19. And he was like, I have asthma and also a lot of trauma. This appeal goes all the way back to his childhood.
Wow.
He was a member of the Uptown Kings gang.
Wow.
In Albuquerque. He was on methamphetamines. He was on drugs. I mean, they give a real history. He talked about SA. He did not have a good life. The court wasn't moved at all, but he was just like, I'm really nervous about my asthma if I get COVID-19 again. And they're like, Effie, we all got pain.
Right.
It's COVID-19. It's here. We can't grant compassionate release to murderers. So that was the reason I initially started reading it, is I thought maybe he got some incurable disease very young. He appealed 3 times and they were like, we're going to add time onto your sentence if you keep appealing. They're like, wow. Nah. Nah means nah.
Well, the thing is that the man he shot was a guy named Ricky Camingo, who was a high school football star. Mm-hmm. And apparently at a traffic stop, they exchanged words and Sebastian wanted revenge. So he found Ricky and gunned him down. It's so sad and stupid that he felt the need to end someone's life over that. And it's like, so you want compassionate release because you have asthma, but you shot this guy because maybe he called you an asshole at a red light.
Right. And his whole life, he was in and out of trouble, drugs, gangs. You know, he did make a point to say that, like, he's turned his life around. He is a model inmate, which, great. Like, do that for yourself. Be a good human being for yourself.
Yeah.
You're not getting compassionate release when everyone is scared of COVID-19. And that was right at the beginning. He did that in April of 2020.
Wow.
So it was right at the start. He's like, I have asthma. I can't do it. And they're like, you shouldn't have killed the child, okay?
Yeah.
All of his appeals, he's done. He'll be out when he's out.
Well, we are moving on to our next story of escape.
March 1972, Indianapolis, Indiana. Indiana Women's Prison.
This prison was built in 1873, and it was the first—
Honey, don't skip over that date.
Why?
That was the year you were born. Come on.
The year you were born. And this was the first maximum security prison for women. And they had people serving time for all kinds of reasons.
Well, let Dana Blank say it, because she's the former superintendent of this women's prison. And listen to the type of things that would get you a stay at this lovely retreat.
At that time, there were women with public intoxication, prostitution, you know, minor theft, all the way to those convicted of murder.
Now, listen, this is maximum security prison. I want women to have maximum security prison. I take women having minimum security. I'm on board with security for women. And people who do heinous crimes should be sent to max. But women who had one too many chablis in public are being sent to max?
Wild.
Could you imagine if, like, two cellmates were together and one is like, what are you in for? And she's like, well, I stole a couple of gallons of formula. What about you? She's like, murder. Cool.
That is
cool. Yeah.
Wild. Yeah. Also, legalized sex work. It's never going away, and mandate it so people can be protected. Anyway.
Oh, you know what I just thought? You know why all the women were sent there? I'll bet that prison had a really good kitchen and they just needed to stay there. That's probably it. Yeah.
We've got a Dutch oven. So we hear about 27-year-old Linda Darby, who was serving a life sentence after she was convicted of murdering her husband, Charles, in 1970. And Linda always maintained her innocence. Her former boss, Bill Hatfield, is here. And he's like, I believe she was framed. She could never hurt anyone. And in a twist of events, Linda's here.
And at this point, they tell us she's serving life. And, you know, that guy didn't think she did it. And Linda Darby says she didn't do it either.
I just expected at the end of the trial that I was going home. It was like, I don't know why I'm here.
I mean, listen, I know I tend to, like, take women's side a little too aggressively, but, like, I mean, that sounds legit.
Yeah. This is going to be a cakewalk. I mean, by the end of this, I'm just going to sit this one out. I'm just going to take a backseat. Y'all do what you got to do. And then I got to get home because I've got a meatloaf to make.
Yeah, they're like, you're guilty. And she's like, oh, my God, you guys are serious about this? Oh, my God. I had no idea.
That's a real judge. By her first 2 years in prison, Linda has no appeals left. And now she has 5 children that she's not going to get to see. So we hit March 13th, 1972.
Linda Darby is ordered to go to the recreation area.
They told me that I had to get up get dressed and go to rec. But I didn't argue with them. I did what they said.
Although a convicted killer, Darby is not escorted.
At this maximum security prison, nobody escorts her anyway. They're just like, Linda, go do some squats and some Flying Dutchman.
Okay.
Now, a lot of the plans that we hear on this show are very well crafted. Sometimes they're digging for months or planning for months or hoarding sheets or whatever. The plans are well thought out. Linda's, much like the decisions I make in my adult life, is not thought out at all.
Nope, it is not. It is a very quick decision. And she heads behind the prison dental office where she worked and runs to the gate, which has barbed wire on top of it, right? She scales the fence. Her gloves got caught on the barbed wire and her hands get cut up. But she still manages to get to the other side and then she's on foot. But where is she gonna go? Because in the words of Martha Reeves and the Vandellas,
of nowhere to run and nowhere to hide, she is not from Indianapolis.
No.
She does not know Indianapolis. She literally, not only does she have nowhere to run, she doesn't know where to run. So she finds an abandoned house. She stays there for 3 nights.
Which is risky.
Totally. And like scary because monsters.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in an abandoned house with all those monsters. They come out when it gets dark.
Mike Wazowski.
So she can't stay there forever. So she goes to another random house.
She sees this house and she's like,
and it looked inviting.
What makes a house look inviting? And I'm thinking, oh, right, he probably had a Live, Laugh, Loads welcome mat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, one time coming back from the city, I was house sitting my friend's house out in South Orange. I fell asleep on the train, missed the stop. I wound up in like Montclair, New Jersey or something. And I went to a house that had little kid shoes in the front and like toys in the front. I was like, oh, they have kids. They're not going to murder me. Spoiler, I was murdered. I'm not even here anymore. But that's what was inviting to me. I was like, they have kids. I'll be safe. And my phone was dead because why wouldn't it be? And I had to use their phone.
See, it's so funny. It's the opposite for me. I'd be like, ugh, kid shoes. No, keep walking.
Now she knocks on the door and a man by the name of William McElroy Jr. opens it. And she says, can I use your phone? And he looks down and sees her bloody hands and says, what happened to your hands? And without missing a beat, she's like, I got in a fight with my boyfriend. He's really abusive. And he pushed me off his motorcycle. And of course, this guy's like, oh my gosh, of course, come in, clean yourself up. He feels bad for her.
And he's like, honestly, you can just stay with me. He's thinking she's in a bad situation and I can help. Could never be me, but okay. So now at this time, Indianapolis police are all over the city, but in William's home, she can lay low.
So she stays for a little bit of peach cobbler and some water. JK, they fall in love.
Honey, this went from a prison break story to a fucking love story. This is Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks and You've Got Mail.
I don't get it.
Just, I think about it. I haven't.
Like, just like a rom-com, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. I got confused because they, like, write letters back and forth and, like, just, you know, blah, blah.
Ellen, look at me.
Okay, yeah.
Keep telling your story.
You want me to keep going?
Soon they fall in love and move to McElroy's hometown of Pulaski, Tennessee, where they run an antique store and have two children of their own.
She's like, my old life, blah, don't need it, don't want it. And the gag of all gags, she doesn't tell him anything about her past.
This man has no idea. He has no idea she is a convicted murderer on the run. Also, what you should know too, this is in the 70s. They are an interracial couple in Tennessee.
Good point.
I'm like, work, because she says, this town embraced me. They were great. Mm-hmm. I loved it here. Everyone was so nice. And I'm like, wow, that's actually amazing.
And meanwhile, they're running this like antique shop selling like lovely equestrian paintings from the mid-1800s and women's suffrage memorabilia. What could be better?
Well, she settles in and she calls Pulaski home, not for months, not for years, but for decades.
Yeah.
And her daughter, Chandra, is here and she says, my mom is wonderful. Mm-hmm. She's a great mother. She's an incredible grandmother. She's just a really good person. So now we hit, wait for it, 2007.
You all, this story is bananas and they tell a fraction of it. Let me just tell you that right now.
She's been on the run for 35 years.
So now there's this thing in Indiana called the Indiana Intelligence Fusion Center. I feel like they just put a lot of words together and called it a place.
Yep.
Fusion Center? Anyway, it's like a new fugitive tracking system.
Yeah, that local, state, and federal agencies have access to so they can share information. And unbeknownst to Linda Darby, it takes less than 1 minute for them to locate her. Linda is 64 now.
And she goes by Linda Elroy. She has a job. She has a family. They own property. I still don't understand how they found her. Her driver's license said Linda Elroy.
I have no idea. Well, one day Linda is at home. She gets a knock on the door. And when she answers, she sees a cop there.
Asker comes to the police department for an interview.
He told her to step outside or whatever they was talking. And then he told us that they would be back in a little bit.
Well, they never come back.
Yeah.
And when a detective shows her a picture of herself from 1970, she says, yes, that's me. And you know what I thought of, Ellen, immediately? You can start a new life, right? If you're one of the few people that get away and you're on the lam for 35 years, can you actually enjoy life? Even if you're happily married, you're a mom, you're a grandma, could you ever enjoy life without constantly looking over your shoulder?
That's so funny you say that because I was thinking the same thing. I feel like after maybe year one, year two, year three, like there has to be a moment where she thought to herself, I did it.
Yeah.
I don't think she would live all of her 35 years like that. Like, I think maybe like four. She's sitting up in like the antique store hawking mid-century barware and Milton Bradley games from the early 1900s. She's like, I did this. She's leading a totally separate life.
Well, she says, I knew this day would come and I thought about addressing it and turning myself in, but I just never got around to it. And I'm like, yeah, dear, you didn't. Because even if you had been like, hey, I know I'm convicted of murdering my husband, but I started a new life. So can we just call it like a truce?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that was never going to happen. So on October 12th, 2007, Linda is arrested and placed back in prison.
And everyone in her second life is like, no way, this isn't true.
And what's devastating for them is that Linda Darby is back to serving her life sentence.
And the kids are devastated. Like Chandra is here and she's crying.
I just feel the family's been torn apart because mama's not here. It's like she was our backbone. She was our rock.
I will give you this research. It starts and ends really fast, right? That first story took much longer, but I was obviously really intrigued because between I Almost Got Away With It and this show, we've never had a lady escapee. I can't think of one.
No, neither can I.
So as of today, November 21st, 2024, Linda Darby is currently in the Indiana Department of Corrections database, and she's incarcerated at the Rockville Correctional Facility. So she's still there as of today. This woman was so beloved in her town. The Pulaski police captain, John Dickey, said, quote, I've known her the last 16 years. She's lived the life of a real good citizen. They should let her go. The police chief had no idea and is going to bat for this woman. But let's talk about her crime a little bit since this is a lady escapee because I'm not lying. I genuinely believed that she didn't do this.
Yeah.
Until I read the circumstances under which her husband Charles was murdered.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it was self-defense, like he was beating her and she killed him. That's what I thought.
Yeah, something like that. But it turns out that this crime was not committed in a way that was smart at all. Not that people should get away with crimes, but I mean, she left a trail of mess behind her. Now, her husband, the way he died, was actually quite violent. He was shot in the chest with a shotgun. Then the house that she shared with her husband and her family that contained his dead body was burned to the ground, and it was alleged that she set that fire.
Right. So originally, they were like, oh no, a house fire and this man is there. But then when they did the autopsy, they assumed he died in the fire. He did not die in the fire.
No.
So going back with a little bit of history, it turned out that Linda and Charles, they got married at a fairly reasonable age. They got married at 26 years old. And, you know, they had their fair share of ups and downs. But Charles was really concerned about the amount of money she was spending. And she told Charles, she's like, well, I'm not spending that money on stuff. I'm spending that money on cancer treatment. And we don't have health insurance. And that is where all that money is going. Cut to, Linda didn't have cancer, and she wasn't getting any kind of treatment. So all of their spending caused them to go into massive debt. Charles then took out an ad in the local newspaper that basically said, "Hi, my wife Linda is a big fat liar. She pretended she had cancer when she didn't, and I want to publicly state I am not responsible for any of the debt she has accrued." So then on New Year's Eve in 1969, the newspaper gets an anonymous phone call and said that Charles and Linda died in a car crash. And it really wasn't investigated or anything. They printed the obituaries in the paper. They did not die in a car crash.
That is insane.
Cut to 1970. The Darby family had a function to drive to, and it was like a 7-hour drive away. Charles wasn't feeling so great, so he decided to stay home, and Linda drove the full 7 hours with the kids. They have their macaroni salad with raisins in it, whatever, and Linda and the kids drive back. So she's on her drive back, and 6.5 hours back, she's very, very close to home. She's like, "Oh, I'm so tired. I couldn't possibly drive another mile." So she stops at a motel with the kids to stay there. And so then she gets home and she's like, "Oh my gosh, my house burned down and my husband is dead." From then on, everyone was like, "Wait, why did you drive 6.5 hours of your 7-hour journey and you were so exhausted? You could not possibly take a cat nap or call your husband to come meet you in that 30 minutes. You had to get a motel room? That's weird, right?"
Well, it turns out that she had told the police, "I was at the hotel the entire time. I called the front desk, asked for a wake-up call. Like, I was here the whole time." Well, when the police interviewed her children, one of them said, "Well, mommy told me not to tell you, but she actually did leave the hotel room for a little while and then she came back. But she told me to tell you she was there all night. Do I get a lollipop?"
Kids are ratting out their parents in this episode.
Yep.
Don't have your kids lie. They're not going to do it. They're going to tell the truth. They just will.
And remember how the house burned down? There was a very strong odor of gasoline. Well, a local gas station attendant reported seeing a woman who fit Linda's description coming to the gas station, asking to borrow a canister that she filled up with gas. She left, and then she came back and returned the canister. There were clothes found in the hotel room. And when they showed those change of clothes to the gas station attendant, he had already described what the clothes looked like. And he said, "Those are in fact the clothes that the person was wearing."
So that testimony was actually redacted from the trial.
Oh.
Because they said that the police showed them pictures. It doesn't matter. It still doesn't look good for you, Linda girl. Once they looked around the motel, they also found a gun in or around one of the vending machines. And they can't like actually like pinpoint it and say that was the gun. But like, again, it's not looking good for you, girl.
It turns out that the neighbor said, "By the way, I sold a shotgun that fits the description of the gun you found to Charles not that long ago." So that was another piece of damning evidence. Also in the autopsy, remember how Ellen said that Charles hadn't been feeling so well? They found traces of arsenic in his body, which means that he had been poisoned, slowly poisoned over a course of time that they don't know. They don't know how long it had been.
What in the deadly women?
So between the arsenic, the gunshot wound, and being burned to death, someone wanted him dead.
Mm-hmm.
And all arrows pointed to Linda.
Yeah. And she was like, "I don't get it. I didn't do it." Could you imagine driving 6.5 hours and be like, "I couldn't possibly"?
Yeah.
And listen, if someone is really tired, I want you to pull over and take a nap. But like, pull over and take a nap and don't like unload all your kids into a motel. Or, "Hey, Charles, baby, come pick me up. I'm only 30 minutes away. I can't stay awake."
I mean, the most damning piece of evidence is the kid.
Oh, absolutely. So Linda filed an appeal as soon as she got back into prison. And then another appeal in 2011, which was dismissed because they were like, "Girl, 40 years have passed. You're past the filing deadline." And then she tried to push back on that appeal. And they're like, Linda, listen. You absconded for 35 years. Take a hint. We're not into you. You're not getting an appeal. You are most likely going to die behind bars.
I have a feeling that Linda Darby is where she belongs.
Yeah. This took such a left until I was doing the research. Now, Joey and I talked about this off mic because we found all of this research on it. I feel like there's even more to the story. You know, it was the 70s. Maybe there was some domestic violence. Maybe there's some substance use. I am speculating. I feel like there was more to the story than just like running up the credit cards and stuff.
Right.
I'm not defending her. I'm just saying that since she decided to go with the "I have no idea what you're talking about" out, I'm innocent. Why would she bring up any kind of abuse or DV? Because it was violent. And to your point, she had been planning this for a minute with all of the arsenic and everything.
Yeah. And you had mentioned too that maybe by the time this had gone to trial, they were halfway through. And if she had said, you know, I was a victim of some sort of abuse, they were like, well, now it's going to look like you concocted that story. If you had told the truth from the beginning, it might have ended differently. So both of these stories were insane.
Crazy. The second one was way too short. And also, escape from prison, you can make the check for the holes in your research to Big Mouth and Blue Eyes LLC. It is an undisclosed amount, but, you know, we're here to educate the people. I just honestly, the reason I went hard on the research is I was just fascinated.
Same.
Because I thought she was innocent and I was just fascinated that it was like a lady escapee.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, we expect that check within 7 to 10 business days. Say something funny.
You know, at that prison in Albuquerque, they play that. But just for anyone who ever wants to sleep at my house, I also sleep with music.
Oh.
It's very relaxing. And would you like to hear a clip of it?
I'd love to.
Sleep! Demons! Paralysis!
Cats. Thank you, down bitches. We have a couple more Prison Break episodes left, and then guess what? We're on to a new show. Do you have a show you would love for us to cover? Slide into our DMs, pop onto our Facebook group, tell us all about it.
Yeah, let's cover Living Single, because it's a crime that it was canceled.
And it was actually, like, Friends ripped it off.
Oh, they absolutely did. Anyway, y'all, we love you so much. Again, we just want to thank you for being here. It makes us so happy, and we love our jobs, and we love you, and thank you for just letting us run our mouths.
The world is a little bit crazy right now. The holidays are coming up. Everyone is going through something. So thank you for letting us come into your ear holes for an hour or two a week and make you smile, make you laugh, make you rage, or maybe you roll your eyes at us. Maybe you hate listen.
Ellen, never say come in your ear holes again. Thank you.
That is fair. I love you, Joey.
I love you, T.E. Lamartian. I love you, DBs. Y'all have a blessed day.
Love you down, bitches. Bye.
Apparently he drove by a high school footballer.
I liked it the other way. He drove by a high school. That's where that was going.
Go back!
So now the... Go ahead.
So it's July
20... So now the cops have a location, and in July of 19... Sorry. I love doing this chase so much. It's never not funny.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.